We should probably get started since we have a rather massive set of documents in front of us and only an hour to spend on them. So this will be a case of speed reading and speed review of where we are in the comp plan. We're going to get an introduction to a package of actions for implementation, both zoning code map amendments as well as some programmatic actions. So I'm going to turn it over to Susan and Eric.
Yeah, maybe you should, I move the amendments.
You move
the
That's right. Let's make it less than an hour. So turn it over to Susan and Eric to walk us through this. Thank you all.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Mayor, Council. So the purpose of today's work session is for you all to jump in and get ready for the hearings that are coming up soon and the discussions around the zoning map and the zoning code. As you remember, just 3 months ago, you adopted a new comprehensive plan for the city, and in the comprehensive plan, you clearly articulated the housing, industrial land, open space, land use decisions that you wanted for the next 20 years to look forward to in terms of a vision for the city, and sort of the intention for how you wanted and where you wanted the city to grow. So as we discussed then, the comprehensive plan is the big vision. And sets out the policies. We're now at the zoning map and the zoning code, which outlines the day-to-day rules for how we make decisions about development in terms of how we do it now. So this project is the first step in making changes to the zoning code and the zoning map. It's going to bring all of those rules into alignment with the comprehensive plan over time. We're not doing it all at once, obviously. This is not, absolutely not, a complete rewrite of the zoning code. It's more of a tactical, sort of surgical approach to doing the things that are most important first, so that we can eliminate some of the conflicts that are in the code right now, and also so that we can get the rules right to implement the policies and the vision that you set out in the comprehensive plan. Eric's going to outline what we're going to do today and on Thursday. And also, I wanted to say that just like with the comprehensive plan, your staff has been amazing already, meeting with Eric. We'll continue to do that. Joe, Eric, and I, and Deborah, and others will be available to meet one-on-one or what you need to get through this. It may seem a little daunting once again, but remember that the Planning and Sustainability Commission has been very arduously working through all of this, and they will be providing you with specific recommendations and their thoughts on, you know, what the next steps are. So I think that will provide a really good framework for you.
Susan, I have a quick question. Could you give us just a quick overview of the timeline? So we adopted the comprehensive plan. Now we're going to take some actions to implement it. So when is it actually binding on anyone out there that's thinking about building something or planning? When's the earliest it's binding on the public, and what is in place until that moment in time?
I'm going to let Eric I want to give you just a little bit more background before we answer that. So I'm going to let Eric walk through what we're going to do right now, and then that'll provide sort of like the steps for where we go, because this does not happen immediately. Obviously, we adopt it, and then it needs to go to the state in terms of their approval. So maybe you can get the specifics. The
question is, beyond the technical questions of when does it actually, you know, get approved and become effective, where we made some significant policy decisions in the comprehensive plan, is there a difference between sort of the spirit and the letter of the law? In other words, if we said in the comprehensive plan, you can't put a grocery store in an industrial district.
Right.
And yet the code hasn't been updated to reflect that. Can someone in this interim basis come in and try to put a grocery store in?
It's not until the code is the law in terms of the actual development rules for how we get to do things. So there are many things, in fact, right now, where our zoning code and our comprehensive plan are not quite in alignment. And so for the past 20, 30 years, people have been doing things that are not in the spirit of the comprehensive plan because we haven't changed the zoning code yet. And so some of those changes are the things we're looking at right now. So it's the code that actually is what allows you to take action or not.
So just to put it in language that I can understand, we may have a land use proceeding, quasi-judicial, let's say, in the next 6 months, where someone is seeking an action before us which is contrary to our recently adopted comprehensive plan, but because the code hasn't been adopted and the changes haven't been made, we have to follow the old roadmap?
Yes, until you make those changes. And we can make those changes. And I guess one thing to consider is it is still possible to make some code changes based on the existing comprehensive plan. So our new comprehensive plan hasn't been approved yet. I don't want us to do very much of that, and DLCD won't let us do very much of that. But if there is something you want to do that's singular, that may be possible.
So just to segue off of that question, this, as you may remember, is part of the periodic review process that the state mandates that we update our comprehensive plan regularly or periodically. This is the last phase of that work plan. So after the policy document is sent off to the state and acknowledged, this package that we're bringing here is the implementation ordinance, and it would be the final step to completing that state periodic review requirement. And as Susan mentioned, it's not in effect yet, the comp plan, nor the codes that we're bringing you. The effective date of the ordinance you adopted in June is January 1, 2018, in terms of the new policies taking effect. So between now and January 1, 2018, there is this interim period where you're still using the old comp plan and the current zoning code. This ordinance that will put forward the new codes to implement the new comp plan will also take effect January 1, 2018, barring any other appeals or reasons that it would be delayed. But so you'll have that gap, and it could work both ways. There could be good projects that are awaiting codes that are part of this, or there could be projects that that you know you wish you could deny, but there's not policy basis under the current comp plan, but there maybe would be under the future. That is an awkward transition, but it's something that most cities go through and when we update our comp plans.
The best strategy would be just to set over any land use proceeding until 2018.
Well, you know, we've
just
talked,
to avoid any ambiguity about that.
We've talked to BDS about sort of how do they treat applicants at the counter when they come in and ask that question, and it's kind of up to them. We can't. We probably would not, you know, tell someone they can't apply for a permit until 2018, but we can certainly warn them that the codes could change then, and let them make an informed decision about whether they want to apply under the old code or the new code. And in order to be vested with the old code, you have to get a permit in or have a land use decision granted. And similarly, you can't apply for something under the new code until it's actually in effect. So there's a. So I want to take a few minutes to just walk you through the materials in front of you. And as Susan noted, there are two binders here. They're fairly thick. But keep in mind that much of this is simply following through on policy direction that you already debated this spring with the comp plan. And that is the nature of the Oregon land use system is that the zoning code has to be consistent with the comp plan. And, of course, there are details where there are going to be choices that you can make within the spirit of the comp plan, and we'll try and point those choices out as we go through the code, but much of what's in this package is simply a follow-through to the policies that you adopted a few months ago. For each component, we over the next few sessions, and we have three briefings today, this Thursday, and then next Tuesday. Through that series, we hope to walk you through each of the elements of this proposal or recommendation at this stage, and identify why we believe it's important or why did we do it, what's in it, and then identify themes you might hear in the testimony or issues that we expect to come up because they did at the Planning Commission. So you have two binders. The red binder is general information and includes a schedule, summaries, and staff reports. The blue binder is the actual recommended documents, and that includes code, zoning map, and a number of other elements, which I'll walk you through in a moment. There are four basic things happening with this recommendation. There are zoning map changes that correspond and implement the new comp plan map. There are zoning code changes, which is the thickest piece of this. There's a new public involvement program, which is a state mandate that we update. And then there's additional updates to the transportation system plan. So everything you're going to be hearing about and discussing falls into one of those four bins. To get there, we actually had there were seven elements to the to the project, and the Planning Commission looked at each element and looked at each staff report and has made its recommendation. The first of those is the commercial mixed-use zoning overhaul. We took on this because outside the central city, a large percentage of our growth over the next 20 years is going to occur in the mixed-use areas. And until this update, the commercial mixed-use codes had not been really reviewed in the context of most of those codes were written before mixed-use development was regularly happening. So now we have some experience with that and know what the issues are. The second element is the new hospital and college campus zoning designations, and that's following up on the comp plan designations that you adopted a few months ago. This is important because this sector of our economy is one of the fastest growing sectors in terms of job growth and in terms of high wages as well. The next element is updated codes and map changes to ensure we have an adequate supply of employment land. And as you know, this is one of the core requirements that every comp plan has to do within the Oregon land use system. The next element is a set of residential and open space zoning map changes. Deborah will go through this in more detail in the second part of this session this morning. But very briefly, the reason we took this on was to try and allow more density in places close to the centers and corridors that we adopted as the skeleton of our growth strategy, and then try to reduce density and conflicts on where there's problems with providing public services or where there's hazards, so steep slopes or areas prone to flooding. And that was carrying out some of the resiliency principles in the comprehensive plan. The next element was the TSP update, and you probably remember that the what you adopted in June also included elements of the new TSP. At that point, you adopted the new project list, a financial plan, and the policy framework. This stage two of the TSP includes street classification maps, which go in tandem with our zoning maps and need to be coordinated with our zoning maps, some updated objectives as well, more detail on performance measures, and some complementary Title 17 amendments. And PBOT will brief you on that package on next Tuesday. The next element was the new community involvement program. We took this on, one, because the state requires us to have one, but the substance of it was we took on because it's core from the demographic and economic changes we're experiencing that we need to overhaul the way we do public involvement to reflect the demographic changes of the city and reflect the equity principles that we put in both the Portland plan and the comp plan. And the last element was a bundle of miscellaneous code changes that didn't fit into those bigger categories. But again, it's all things that we believe are necessary to avoid conflicts between the code and the new comp plan. And as Susan mentioned, this isn't a total rewrite, but we did identify some surgical changes that if we didn't make, we think there would just be a conflict between the code and the policies, some of which are fairly minor. So that's the blue binder. The red binder, that's the red binder. The staff reports that go with each of those is a one-page, sort of one-pager about each element of the project. And the schedule, and I'll just briefly mention the schedule. We mentioned the briefings, which are it's the second page in your red binder is the schedule, just to look at that. We have hearings scheduled on October 6th and October 13th. Those are scheduled hearings. The final part of that, the way we imagine this playing out is that you would then reflect on what you heard, discuss some amendments, and then there would be a potential hearing on amendments in November, and then subsequent work sessions. And that latter part of the schedule, of course, is pretty tentative, depending on how much you hear and what you want to talk about, but we've tentatively laid that out. Let me go to what's in the blue binder. So the first thing you'll see in the blue binder is a fold-out map of the zoning code recommendations, and like our zoning map recommendations, And this, again, is not a complete redo of the zoning map, but it's changes that generally reflect the same territories that you debated with the comprehensive plan map. We're just updating the zoning map to reflect that. And Deborah will go into more detail. These are available on our map app, which has been republished online, as well as PDFs, and people can get paper copies at a larger scale if they'd like. Those are the changes, yeah. And we do have available a map that shows the changes and the unchanged areas all in one. If you'd like to look at that, that's available.
Like
we can bring big ones at whatever size you want.
We have maps by district, if it's to be able to zoom in. Okay. Lore.
The second and the thickest document in the blue binder is this brown, with the brown cover, and that's actually the zoning code changes that correspond to all of it. It's all been combined because there were some chapters that are touched by multiple elements, so we just published one set of code changes by chapter. It's not the whole zoning code, but it's a big chunk because we did a lot of pieces, small pieces here and there. The biggest piece of this is the mixed-use commercial zoning code overhaul. Behind that are the details of the transportation system plan, as well as an appendix that goes with that, which is some additional detail. Some of the key element of this that I think you'll hear about is kind of midway through there are some color maps that look kind of like that. Those are the street classification maps. So if you recall, one of the last things you resolved in the comp plan policy was a discussion of some bikeways in Northeast Portland and the location. So you'll probably get similar testimony from a variety of locations around the city around what are the street classification maps going to show, in addition to zoning map testimony.
I think that's important, too, is that because what's going to happen with you all, I'm guessing, as it often does, is it kind of mirrors the conversation and the pattern that happened at the Planning Commission. And there will be issues that come before you in terms of testimony that you've already made a decision on. But we want to let everybody speak and let them have their say again, and yet you've already sort of made you've shown your intention and direction in the comprehensive plan, and this is just carrying it out. So it would be hard to reopen some of those things.
You know, that's an ominous comment you just made. I'm thinking about, because people will reasonably think they can relitigate the merits in the context of the amendments. And I guess what you're suggesting is that the script that we read at each hearing needs to make clear that we're not reopening the comp plan, but we do want to make sure the amendments are faithful to what we did through the comp plan.
Aren't there still some situations where the comp plan designation might need to be different from the zoning?
Yes, and you are allowed to.
My button came off. You're allowed to have a higher density on the comp plan and a lower density in the zoning map if you don't think it's ready or ripe for that additional development. You aren't allowed to do the reverse, though. And so particularly with the down designations where we reduced density, you don't have a choice to not do that down zone because you did the comp plan down designation already. Now, of course, you are going to get testimony.
Just before you go on, have you addressed the issues that we talked about on windfall profits and how we maybe add some hurdles before the zoning code matches the comp plan?
There is going to be a discussion of that, and I don't know if that's entirely settled, but there are some elements that relate to that. There was one other thought I had, and it just escaped me. You may find some of that testimony to reconsider the comp plan compelling, and I guess our advice in that situation is if you find yourself in a situation where you are hearing zoning map testimony that makes you reconsider some comp plan map, there is a, you know, this isn't the last time you're going to change the comp plan or the zoning map. And so there is a maybe a legal strategy where you set that aside on a list and prepare some kind of follow-up ordinance that would go into effect later after the new comp plan is acknowledged to correct and reconcile those. And in fact, we probably, inevitably, somebody will develop something under the old comp plan that doesn't meet the new codes, and there may be a desire to sort of true up the map to things that have already happened at some point. So we would anticipate some kind of cleanup ordinance in 2018 to reconcile some of that. So if you find yourself in that situation, you know, we want to not reopen the comp plan for because we want to be done with periodic review and not have the state continuing to look over our shoulder. But the, you know, we know that the comp plan is ever changing and you're going to amend it again in the future. So we would try and keep a list of those things and work out a strategy. The next piece is the purple document behind the TSP is the Community Involvement Program. This is not code. Well, there actually is a Title III amendment, but for the most part, it's programmatic proposal for how the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability would manage public involvement under the new policies. So it's sort of the implementation approach to those new policies in Chapter 2 of the comp plan. And Deborah and Sarah will talk to you later this morning about what's in that. The last element is a letter from our Community Involvement Committee, and this is a state requirement that's part of periodic review that every element, every time we come to you with a periodic review piece, we have to include a report from our Oversight Committee on Public Involvement, and this is what that is. So that's the materials. We will be filing the ordinance next week, and again, we have the first hearing on October 6th. The testimony is coming in like last time through the email, through letters to all of you, and through our map app. And so if you, your staff have access to that email, if they get letters, our request is that you forward that to the email so that we collect all that in one place. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Deborah, who will walk through a little more details on the zoning map.
Okay. Good morning. Don't know if this is this on? And Carla's not here. We do have a PowerPoint, although I know you can't see. It's for the audience. I have provided you with slides, and I'll try and remember when to tell you to turn the page. So I'm going to be talking about two of the elements of the early implementation package, starting with the zoning map, and then followed by the community involvement program. And I'm joined today by Marty Stockton, to my left. Marty has been working with me and the rest of our team on the zoning map, and from this point forward, Marty will be the person working with both you and staff to both understand the recommendation and to digest testimony. And to her left is Sarah Wright. Sarah has been the lead on the community involvement program, and she'll be the person working with you and your staff from this point forward on community involvement program. So let me start. I don't know how to turn on the presentation for you, but I'll just go ahead and start talking, and we'll catch up. So again, I'm going to be starting with an overview of the zoning map. And as both Susan and Eric said, for the most part, all the decisions you'll be making about the zoning map correlate very directly with decisions you've already made on the comprehensive plan map. It's a fairly focused set of changes, which you'll see, and they are all intended to implement both the policies and the comprehensive plan map that you've decided. Because you're already very familiar with the comprehensive plan map, since you've waded through it, I wanted to just touch on some of the differences between the comprehensive plan map and the zoning map. And the most fundamental difference is the comprehensive plan map is a long-term map providing general direction. The zoning map is much more specific. It provides the actual rules for what can be developed on any given property. So it provides a much more specific set of rules. And it represents what can be built today, whereas the comprehensive plan map is a 20-year vision. In many cases, they match, but in some cases, they don't. And there are reasons why, when there's a distinction, why there may be a difference between the long-term designation and the zoning. As was noted, zones have to be consistent with the comprehensive plan map, but consistent doesn't mean they match. The comprehensive plan map can provide something more intensive looking ahead long term. The zoning may be a little less intensive or can match, but zoning can never be more intensive than the comprehensive plan designation. the zoning map brings together four different projects that were what we called early implementation projects that each involved some map elements, some zoning map, employment, campus institutions, residential and open space, and mixed use. Each of those was a project that proceeded along its own public involvement course. Planning and Sustainability Commission made decisions about each one separately, but we're now bringing those together. Employment, campus institution, and mixed use involved both code and map. Residential and open space was map only. There may be some code decisions you'll be making in the near future related to residential code, but those aren't part of this package today. So through, for example, the residential infill project and the multifamily project, there would be some residential code things. But today, you're going to be looking at just the map for residential and open space. And I keep forgetting to tell you to turn the page, but we're now onto the next page with employment zones. This is one of those projects. So in brief, this project looked at bringing forward some zoning map changes that would add opportunities for jobs and employment in some key areas. Some examples, and on your map and your handout, you can see in the sort of pink and violet shades, these are places where we've added some general employment land to provide jobs in key locations. Some major sites would include the Kmart site in Park Rose. That was one of your comprehensive plan map decisions that you made in June. Hayden Meadows is another large site where we've added employment zoning. There's some locations along Gateway, or within Gateway and along 82nd Avenue, as well as some others scattered through the city. Another key change that you'll be seeing on the zoning map is the addition of a new prime industrial overlay zone. And this is an overlay we've applied to most but not all of our industrial sanctuary properties with that comp plan designation, but specifically for those properties that have been designated by Metro and Title IV as regionally significant industrial lands. And that's shown on your map with a light blue crosshatch. A third component of the employment zoning map is to add, expand the area that allows industrial office uses in the Central City Plan District in Central East Side. And I'm not going to go into that now, but you'll hear more about that on Thursday as part of the code updates. And then one more thing on that particular map that was part of the employment considerations on the zoning map, where we applied some open space zoning in industrial areas, and those are shown in green on that map, where the land in industrial areas is already committed to open space use. Now, those aren't the only open space zones that we've added, but you'll be seeing more in a few minutes. But those were in the context of the industrial zoning.
Mention one thing about the Central City piece that Deborah mentioned, which is that originally was part of the Central City Plan, but because that change in the EOS and the Central East Side relates to our employment land supply, we've put it into this comp plan implementation package, essentially cut it out of that and pasted it into this so that we can be in compliance as part of periodic review.
So next I'm going to touch on the campus institutions, that portion of the zoning map change. These are all consistent with the new comprehensive plan designation that you approved and adopted in June. We've applied a campus institution zone, one of two new zones that we've created, to 16 campuses in the city. The new CI1 zone is applied to college campuses that are predominantly surrounded by residential neighborhoods. And then the CI2 zone is applied to medical centers and certain college campuses that are more urban in scale. These are tending to be on the, either the corridors or within centers. So it's a slight difference in scale and urban level intensity for those two zones. And so the map you have in front of you, it shows 15 of the campuses where these two new zones are applied. There is a 16th that's been added through testimony to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and that's the National University of Natural Medicine, which was added. Now, The campus institution comp plan designation is also applied on Markham Hill, but we did not apply the new zone to the Markham Hill campus or to PSU because they each have already built into their zoning standards some very campus-specific development standards through the plan districts. So there was no need in this case.
They're in CX, well, not
all, EX zone
and CX, and then they have the plan district designation.
Right. So those already provide very specific development standards.
So and get to the same sort of place by a different route.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And similarly, the through the comprehensive plan map, you did apply the campus institution comp plan designation to all public high schools and private high schools that are 10 acres or larger. We did not apply the new campus zone, however. We've retained the existing zoning, which for high schools tends to generally be residential zones. And that's as an interim measure because we anticipate at some point in the future we may be looking at a new zone or new regulatory tool for school campuses, for high schools or other schools. So we wanted to retain the existing zoning in the meantime. So now, next page is residential and open space. As I said, these are map changes only without accompanying code changes. The residential zoning map changes fall into one of four categories. The first was, and this is by far the majority of the residential and open space zones, were to match the comprehensive plan designations you've just adopted in June. For open space, there's a direct one-to-one correspondence. If you applied open space as a comp plan, open space zone, no question about that. Residential zones, for the most part, match, but as we noted earlier, sometimes there's a there's not a match, and that's for a reason that we've spelled out in the reports that you have. So there are a few places where they do not match. And there are a number of places that you may recall through the comprehensive plan mapping where we did propose down designation in areas that were further from services, areas that are more costly to provide services, and they have natural hazard risks, public health hazards, or potential risks because of landslides, slope, drainage, stormwater management, et cetera. So in those cases where we did propose down designation, we've brought the zoning down to match as well. Now, there's a second category of residential changes where we've proposed some up zones in locations adjacent to centers where the residential zone was changed to provide more opportunity for housing in those really amenity-rich areas. Another category of zone changes, residential zone changes, is in the David Douglas School District, and you may recall there were areas where in Powellhurst-Gilbert where we determined that we could keep the residential comprehensive plan designation because ultimately, in the long term, that's the right designation. But in the meantime, we've proposed to downzone to temporarily relieve some of the pressure on enrollment because of the school overcrowding. And this has been in, proposed in conjunction with the school district. We've been talking with them quite a bit. They're in pursuit of acquiring new sites for schools. They propose to build new elementary schools to relieve their pressure, and we propose this zoning measure to be an interim while they're pursuing those avenues to relieve their pressure. So we hope to be able to reverse this at some point when they've met the capacity needs. And then the fourth category is an important one, and this is where we looked at areas that back in 1980, the comprehensive plan anticipated some residential density, but the zoning was kept lower. And so for all these years, there's been a distinction between the comprehensive plan capacity and the zoning. We looked at approximately 40 of those areas and did an evaluation of the availability of services, proximity to centers, recent development activity, demographics, a number of factors, and we did a thorough evaluation of those 40. And from that evaluation, the PSC has recommended to change the zoning to match the comprehensive plan designation applied in 1980 in about half of those areas. And so we called those zoning review areas. And there was some specific neighborhood-specific public involvement we did to have conversations about those areas. And you'll be hearing testimony both in favor and in opposition to some of those zone changes. And then finally, for the residential and really minor changes, we did do some adjustment with the A overlay. There were places where it's been applied where we either removed it because it no longer matches or corresponds with the base zone, or we added it where it was missing from an area. So a few minor adjustments there. And I think you all see the map that shows all of the residential and open space zones. And as you can see, the green are open spaces. Those are all areas I didn't mention, but they're scattered through the city, and those are all publicly owned sites. I think one or two of them might be owned by a land trust, but for the most part, they're publicly owned in open space use or planned for open space use. And then you can see the different colors for different kinds of residential changes. The yellow and the yellowish green shades are single dwelling zone changes. The blue are multifamily zones, and then the green, of course, is open space. And of those residential changes, you can see that in the overall picture, there are really very few of these changes overall. As Susan said, we didn't do an overhaul of the whole zoning map. We did a very focused review of the zoning map, and it's about 10% of the overall acreage of the city, which is subject to change here. And of the changes in the residential zones, I wanted to just note that of the acreage, approximately 26% of that acreage is upzoned and 74% is downzoned. And again, most of those downzoning are in the areas where we noted the risks of health and safety, landslides, and so forth. And those all match the comp plan map changes you already voted on. Mixed-use zones is next. This map, the next page, shows the four mixed-use comp plan designations. We've got urban center, civic corridor, neighborhood, and dispersed. And on the next page, you'll see there's a correspondence table. Not every zone matches every comp plan designation. There's a correlation between zones. We did go from our current nine commercial mixed-use zones down to five. So we did reduce the number of zones. The current zones that we have were created 20 years ago, so we did do an update of all of the zones, and you'll hear more about that on Thursday. CR is our newest zone, which is the smallest scale, applied in very limited situations in residential neighborhoods, isolated sort of neighborhood scale commercial. CM3 is the most intensive urban zone, and then there's a range in between that. CE is the more auto-accommodating zone and has been applied in a less expensive way, more limited way. But you can see from this chart which zones correspond with which designations. Let's see. There are a few other things I want to note that are mapped as part of the mixed-use zones. We have expanded the D overlay to match the mixed-use urban center comp plan designation, so that's an important change. The new center's Main Street overlay has been mapped, and in that overlay, we require active ground floor uses in centers. We've removed the B, which is the buffer overlay, because it was very similar to the base zone standard, so it was no longer necessary as a new overlay. And then we've also done some rejiggering of some of what had been overlays into our new plan districts. So those are some of the changes that are reflected in the map for mixed use. And then you see the map of all the mixed use zones applied in the next page. And so to wrap up, I just wanted to give you a quick preview of the kinds of testimony we anticipate you hearing on the zoning map. As I said earlier, you'll hear a mix of supportive and opposing testimony about those zoning review areas. Those are the areas where we've done upzoning to match what had been mapped in 1980 and which you had more recently affirmed in June. So that will probably constitute a lot of the testimony here on residential zoning. You'll hear testimony about the mixed-use map, people asking for more intensity or less intensity, depending on where they are and whether they're property owners or neighbors. So that will be quite a mix. You'll hear testimony about CE zone and the restrictions on or their allowances for drive-thrus. You'll probably hear testimony about the D overlay, the design overlay, whether it's been added or where it should be added, where we haven't proposed it. And then, you'll hear some testimony from folks who may not have been satisfied with your earlier decisions about comprehensive plan map designations, and they'll be asking you to revisit those. And I think that's it for the zoning map. So I can answer questions, or we can move on to the community involvement program.
I think that preview of what we're likely to be hearing the most about is very accurate, and we should all be prepared for that. I think the Planning Commission for example, on the drive-through issue, I think the Planning Commission amped it up even more.
They did.
We will be hearing even more about that. So that's fine with me. I'm happy with where we are. But nevertheless, you can expect some controversy about that.
One other thing is, in addition to talking to us, which is great, of course, but you have the Planning and Sustainability Commission members and the chair who have also offered to meet with you anytime to, you know, go over some of these issues, because they had to wrestle, obviously, with the same questions that you're going to deal with and the process they went through to make their decisions, trying to go back to the basic ideas that you had set forth in the comp plan and not trying to rethink it all over again.
Okay, so I'm going to switch gears now, reintroduce Sarah Wright, who can also help answer questions, and you'll be working with her on community involvement. So community involvement program is one of the required elements of our periodic review. Besides being required to do this, why we're doing this is we're building on the Portland Plan's F40 framework, and we're implementing Chapter 2 of the Comprehensive Plan. I just wanted to read you a quote from the Portland Plan Framework for Equity. It says, "Advancing equity in Portland means improving the way the city works, starting with how the city government and its partners make decisions, invest, and engage with Portlanders and each other to measure success." So this idea of how we engage with Portlanders is very fundamental to Portland Plan, Comprehensive Plan, and now this is the implementing program to carry that out. The changing demographic profile of Portland means we really need to do things differently. We need to be far more inclusive in our outreach and our engagement to make sure that city decisions are informed by the voices of Portlanders who haven't been historically or who aren't today involved in civic decision-making. And we need to strive for increased transparency in our planning processes, and we hear this message quite a bit. This program adds to and complements our vaunted history and our traditions and our practices of neighborhood involvement. So this is additive, and we think this really strengthens how we do our work in Portland. Now, I want to just show you, and you'll be able to see in your handout here, that our 1980 comprehensive plan on the left-hand column, that page that you can see here, is the entire comprehensive plan policy about community involvement. It's one goal and four policies. That is it. That's the entire thing. And in contrast, our new adopted comprehensive plan policies about community involvement include 7 goals and 40 policies. So much more robust, much more rich. And so there's so much of this because this matters so much to Portlanders right now, to be more inclusive in how we do things differently. The policies are here, but we now need this program to help tell us, staff, how we do our work. It's really a much more a nuts and bolts approach with some guidelines and resources to provide a continuous a way that we can continuously improve our practices. And so that's what this program is about. This is an early implementation project, just like the other ones you're hearing about, but it's different in terms of it's not goals, and it's not, maps and code for the most part. It's a description of a program. It's giving us direction. And it's a support structure for staff to carry out the goals and policies of Chapter 2 in the comp plan. There's a program that the Chapter 2 tells us we need a program, so this is a program, and then it also tells us we need some elements within that program. And so the specific requirements that we need to fulfill here is, one, to create a new community involvement committee And Chapter 2 tells us that we need this new CIC as an independent body to take on a community involvement oversight role. It's currently carried out by the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and this transfers that role to a newly forged body. It's going to be an advisory body that will support and advise staff, but also it will be responsible to revise and update the manual that I'll talk to you about in a moment. The process of establishing the charter for this new committee and recruiting and selecting members will take place immediately following your adoption of this program. We're already working with the Office of Equity and Human Rights, Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and PIAC, the Public Involvement Advisory Council, to establish a process based on best practices of recruiting and forming a new committee. So that work is already underway. And we've already gotten some good feedback from our the recently concluded CIC that we've been working with throughout the comprehensive plan. They have weighed in on this and given us some good advice about both the chartering and recruitment of that new group. So that work is underway now. The second required element that we have committed to do is create a new community engagement manual. There's a draft manual. It's part of this program. It will be revised and adopted by the new CIC, and it will be a continuously improved document. It's dynamic, and we want that manual to continually be updated to reflect best practices and testing what's working and reflecting on our evaluation of practices as we go along. The manual is intended to provide us guidance. It'll include general steps and guiding questions and baseline expectations, but it's not a recipe. It's not a step-by-step prescription. It's guidelines. So we, again, want to be continuously improving what we learn from those practices. I think that's it. I want to just, again, do a little preview of testimony you'll be hearing about the community involvement program. The first issue we expect that you'll be hearing is about the CIC, how we do the recruitment, how we do the charter, who should be on that committee. I think that members of the public have some pretty definite ideas about how that process should go and who should be on it. So you'll probably be hearing that in testimony. Also, I think that you'll be hearing from people who have a very specific function or role they would like to see that group play, more of a watchdog, for example, or have the power to actually stop projects. So you'll be hearing about the intended role of that committee. Another issue I expect you'll be hearing about is the role of neighborhood associations. I believe you heard that in the discussions about Chapter 2 in the comprehensive plan, and you'll hear it again through this program, is whether the push to be more inclusive has an effect on how we treat or respect neighborhood associations. So I think that testimony is likely to come up again. And I think that's it, if you have any questions.
You know, why limit it to just neighborhood associations? The same concern may come up from our neighborhood business districts, and I assume we're going to make the same effort to engage both.
Yeah, good point. Thank you. Yeah.
So what community involvement went into getting the community involvement proposal?
That's a question that I've been asked a lot. This is really based on the years of public involvement in all of the Portland plan and the comprehensive plan that really fed into the development of Chapter 2 to really establish what the policies in Chapter 2 should be. In terms of early engagement, just for what this manual will look like, it's really built on a lot of the work that's happened inside the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability on the equity framework for the climate work. And it's also, we took it out to, I sent out invitations to neighborhood associations, district coalitions, the DCL partners, and other groups just to kind of get early feedback on this early draft of this. And I've been working with PIAC quite a bit. They've worked as kind of a advisory group for this, the development of this program.
Well, I appreciate that. I was at a meeting with Courtney and Directors and Chairs about a year or so ago, and at that point, the directors and chairs said we're completely overwhelmed with everything else we have to do and that they wanted to delay on this part. So I'm a bit concerned to hear that there's been a draft developed that goes out for feedback rather than involving the community in what the draft should say. And I'm just wondering, is this piece... what engagement... are we expecting from all of our community groups and diverse partners
I think, you know, this program is, this document is establishing a new program that's really intended to create the framework to address a lot of concerns that people raise about public involvement in planning. And I think the intent of this program and everything in this document, you know, looking through it, it's all about building a framework that will be continuously improving and bringing in feedback. So I think we really need to build this sort of scaffolding to kind of take that in and to be continuously improving. I think that delaying building that scaffolding would slow us down in implementing Chapter 2. So that's kind of where it's coming from. We have to get this into the periodic review, and it also creates the structure for us to do continuous improvement.
Your advice during the policy discussion about not being too prescriptive and detailed at this initial stage, because there's a lot of comments people will have as we implement this. So we try to keep it fairly tight and as Sarah said, a skeleton rather than all the details. It was developed with direct citizen involvement because the CIC is the core body that has been. It is a group of citizens that are serving on that committee, and they were deeply involved in coming up with the principles of this and the initial pieces.
Thanks. Maybe we could schedule a more in-depth briefing in my office. Thank you.
Questions for Deborah and the team? And next steps, obviously, we have another briefing on Thursday.
Yeah, we have another briefing on Thursday, and we'll walk through at that point four projects.
Right. You heard about the public involvement and the zoning map today. On Thursday, you'll hear about mixed use, the employment zoning, and the campus zoning, and the miscellaneous code package. And then on next Tuesday, you'll hear about the TSP elements.
And in closing, I just have one more little addition, which is that this may be one of the last meetings you have Deborah Stein here. So Deborah is going to retire.
Fundamentally wrong.
I think we'll do some more honoring of her over the next couple of months. But I did want to let you know that Deborah is going to go on a big vacation and come back for a little bit and finish up. But so she won't actually have her last day until the end of the calendar year. But as you all know, and I'll go into this in great depth at some big celebration, she's been everything from, you know, the interim director of the Planning Bureau years ago to just sort of the standard bearer, I think, for how you do great public involvement and how you do interaction with the community, that kind of the heart and soul of what we do versus a lot of the technical details sometimes. And that has made a huge difference to the city.
Susan, I'm pretty sure that Deborah retiring contradicts both the existing comp plan, the proposed comp plan, and the zoning codes. I don't know that can be allowed.
DLCD will strike it down. For sure. You can't possibly succeed without her. We appreciate you very much, Deborah. And the work you have done or continuing to do here right up to the end of your service. It's really, I've worked with you for more years than we both care to admit, and it's all been great work, and I appreciate it so much.
And let me just add that I think your work in developing the neighborhood community plans really changed the conversation between the public and this building. And for that, we have a great debt of thanks to you.
And last but not least, you didn't quit after the Southwest Community Plan, so thank you.
Thank you all very much. Good progress. We'll take a 3-minute break and come back for an executive session on a completely different set of subjects. Thank you.
Great prep. I appreciate it so much. Better than yesterday. Well, that's why those dry runs are current. I used to forget.